DMT World presents The Rambling Rabbit, and I am its host, Happy KB. Welcome to The Rambling Rabbit. It's me, Happy KB, the host. And today we have a very special guest with us. We have Clear from California. We have Cher Noble Michael. And, well, hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Happy.
Happy. You and, see, we can't say each other's names and say our lives.
No, exactly. But Chernobyl. Chernobyl would be the way to properly pronounce it.
Chernobyl. Good.
Chernobyl.
That's in my head now. Okay, Chernobyl. So, hey, welcome. Welcome to the Rambling Rabbit.
I'm honored to be a guest. And what? Coming from North County, San Diego, not too far from Oside, not too far from the 5, the 78, and the 15. Just very happy to be here. Very glad to be a part of this community. And more importantly, also being a part of the local psychedelic community just in my area whenever I do get the chance to connect with others.
I didn't realize that you were clear over where you're at. So you're right over there in California in the midst of everything that's happening, especially with this,
oh yeah,
the mushrooms and stuff. So let's start with, you have been, okay, so it's been just about 3 days over a year that you've, or it's like 3 years. Yeah, it's been three years.
Yeah, almost three years.
Right, you joined on 2020, November 22nd, correct, actually. So what got you to DMT World? How'd you find us?
Sure. So originally, I used to be a part of like some different Reddit forums and also the Shroomery Facebook group. Mm-hmm. However, I never really felt comfortable really posting on the Shroomery Facebook group. And also, you got a lot of folks that are, you know, pretty all high and mighty, but it was also the thought that I really would not like my relatives to go searching my page and then stumbling across, oh, psychonauts, psychedelics. And then I'm like, I am not going to have this convo right now. So it was a matter of, you know, privacy and, you know, keeping my stuff professional too. And then a part of it too is just a lot of the groups are getting shut down. Mm-hmm. And I was just not really going to have it. But I believe Too Weird to Live, Too Rare to Die, or known as Jake on Sid, I believe he was the one that actually left DMT World in the comments saying, hey guys, a lot of the groups are getting shut down. I highly suggest you all switch over. And Reddit was getting shut down little by little too. Like, you know, I was on Uncle Ben's Tech originally, but, you know, that was just to get started. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't really like how the way Reddit has things where, like, you would click on a profile and it shows the interests all categorized in one spot. So mm-hmm. that was just part of it, too. You know, like, just, you know, Reddit, I don't think was going to be able to hold on for too much longer because of the community guidelines and stuff, too.
Yeah, they got very center happy really fast there when all that stuff started happening.
Oh, I mean, I think especially in 2020, I used to find Arvin47 on YouTube, BOD. I followed a lot of different Shroomery members on YouTube, and it's crazy. They just got censored left and right. Like, YouTube, and I remember the good old YouTube back in the day where there was no ads, and you could mm-hmm. find videos on how to make hash or
yep.
how to, like, grow stuff during the early cannabis days when cannabis was still pretty much forbidden unless you yep. had a medical card out here.
Right.
Those were the days that I missed the most because I came from a small town. I'm just gonna name it for fictitious purposes, but
some fools may
know, but it's known as Bricktown. So I'm just gonna call it Bricktown. Okay. But I used to grow up in this place called Bricktown. You can probably find that slang somewhere on some 760 forums, but that was where a lot of the cannabis was grown. And out in the backwoods and stuff where I used to grow up in. And I always find it funny because it was a small town with a shit ton of churches, shit ton of weed. It just it just went hand in hand. But I remember how like hot those days were too. Like
they were smoking and praying at the same time. That's why they had all that.
Right, I'm sure. But yet you got the religious funnelness, like the evangelicals, you know, preaching. You need to stop smoking the marijuanas.
That's right. Well, because if they say don't do it, they knew everybody was going to do it. And that's how they were probably funding some of their stuff. So.
Oh, I'm sure. Like, absolutely.
That cracks me up. Okay, so you grew up in the Bricktown area.
Yeah, that's where I used to grow up in. And, you know, it was a small town not too far from Pendleton, Camp Pendleton. That's where a lot of, like, you know, the Marines, and I'm sure a couple Marines the NC world would probably know where Pendleton is.
Sure.
But I've grown up in that area, and I'll just say it's a small town with a lot of big city problems. Like, growing up, I've grown up with, you know, dealing with gangs and what else? Just, you know, having to, like, you know, rough it out in the neighborhood a little bit. Especially being, like, you know, one of the only white kids growing up in the neighborhood, but you're not necessarily, you know, able to identify with American folk because they live a whole different life compared to the way that you were raised.
Right.
It was a very weird spot to be in, but I used to live on the more, like, low-income part of town. It wasn't very uncommon to see people getting jumped and all other types of wild stuff. You know, I can go on and on and on about all the fucking stuff I had to encounter growing up out there. But also, I went to, like, you know, one of the worst schools in the area, too. Like, there was always race wars going on. There was always issues. There was always problems. And, you know, the school districts didn't care about the students, really. They just wanted to keep funding their pockets.
Right.
You know, then that's usually how it goes for public education out there.
Right.
But it was a rough spot to grow up in. But, you know, there's, like, two sides to that town. You got people that, you know, live, like, on the more upscale part of town. Mm-hmm. They'll send their kids to all the nice schools and stuff like that, like to Temecula or any of those areas out that's a lot nicer, you know, with nicer districts and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when people, like, when you'd ask them, have you really grown up out there? I don't really count them if they haven't gone to the actual school, dealt with the actual problems in the town, as opposed to living on the outskirts where it's all nice and fancy. So it was like a two-sided, two-world out there. But also, a lot of my good friends, you know, they were all from, like, you know, Latin America, Mexico, Guatemala, all different parts. But it was a school that, you know, couldn't cater to a group of people that just couldn't speak English well because the resources were so limited.
Right.
And then, of course, the schools would put them in the corner and they'd make them, you know, only talk in Spanish. But it's like, it doesn't really help much. And I remember there was all these, like, state requirements to graduate, like passing an English test, all that stuff. A lot of guys I went to school with, they just ended up dropping out and either went back home to where they originally came from, or they just went straight to working. So that was a pretty rough thing to, you know, kind of go through and witness, or having friends in that, you know, situation.
Because they legitimately got let down by the school education system by not being able to provide that for them.
No, and it's like, it's heartbreaking, and you know, it's just wild. I mean, I think now things have slowly gotten better from what I was, you know, told or what I've heard from, but you know, it's just unfortunate because a lot of folks come here for a better opportunity.
Right.
But in the end, you know, it's like they're given the short end of the stick, you know, towards the end of it all.
Right. And then they don't know what to do. And they get stuck in jobs and can't get out of certain jobs. And you're right, they do get the short end of the stick. So where did you go from after high school? Then what direction in your life did you go?
So fast forward, after I graduated, I had to, you know, just kind of move on and get out of the town because, you know, a lot of people I've grown up with, a lot of people that stay in town don't do much for themselves. They end up getting locked up or they end up, you know, going, like, you know, just making poor life decisions. Like, I remember, like, one guy, he murdered his girlfriend by one of the gas stations or one of the parking lots over there.
Oh, gosh.
And then I know some other guys I went to school with. They just randomly stab this poor black man to death in the Albertsons parking lot at night. And, you know, of course, it was a hate crime. I mean, they did it for no reason, but they just went after him for no reason, just shanked him to death. And, you know, it's just sad because it's like there are people that they could have done more themselves.
Right.
But they did it all for a gang mentality. And then it all just gets them locked up and that's it. So it's just wild. Like, it was just a town full of fucked up problems. But, you know, if it wasn't for, like, you know, coaches and positive people in my life, I don't know what path I would have gone down, but the goal was to get out. So I got out. I started community college, you know, in a really nice area. I don't know if you know where San Marcos is, but it's a really nice small hub of North County of San Diego. But over there, I started going to community college over there, and, you know, was studying for business. And, you know, I tried to join the military originally, but of course that didn't work out because, you know, I had a medical record that wouldn't have allowed me to join.
What were you looking to go into? Where did you want to
join? I was trying to join the Marines, and that didn't work out. But in a way, I'm kind of glad it did.
Those mushrooms need you. That's why you weren't going.
I think that's what it was too. Yeah. I think that's what it was. It was that, but also when the mandates happened and COVID lockdown started going on, I knew some folks that went in, and some of them got, you know, they didn't want to get it, but they had no choice and they had to get the shot. And then some others, well, the ones that didn't want to get it, they got dishonorably discharged. So it's like, you know, it's like that's what you get in return, I guess, for wanting to help Uncle Sam.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in a way, I think there was some foresight that it wasn't meant to be. And I'm glad it wasn't the case. But I did community college, and then I worked in the cell phone business for about, I want to say, a total of four years. I worked at Target at first selling phones. Then I worked at Costco for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then I worked at a Verizon franchise for only 6 months, but that was a super shady place. a lot of foul business that went on down there. But anyway, so I used to work in the wireless industry, and I remember talking to different coworkers about AI and technologies and all that stuff. But fast forward as of how I found the mushrooms, or how I got introduced to them.
Yeah, tell me. I'm curious, because we've gone to community college, and we're getting a business degree, and we're working with phones. So far, like, there's nothing that says mushrooms. So I want to know how you got to the mushrooms.
Yeah, I'm just trying to fast forward from all of that. So fast forward, time lapse.
I'm good at fast forward.
100%. So. I was in this college group for it was called Young Americans for Liberty. It was a libertarian organization. It fitted my views. So I went up to this conference up in San Jose. It was called a YALCON. I got to meet some well-known people, but again, I am not going to disclose because my views are my own private views. But that's how I met Ryan Muniver. He's the founder of Decriminalize California with the Magic Mushroom Campaign.
Curious.
So I got to meet him over there, and I was curious about it all. And I'm like, hey, you know, I've only have consumed cannabis and all. I was just asking, like, how could I potentially benefit from this? Because, you know, I've heard about them, but I wasn't as open-minded, I guess. Because, you know, I wasn't aware of how the effects would be.
Right.
But, you know, I had a couple of drinks with them and talked about, you know, this was for the 2020 campaign, but, you know, he was talking about, you know, how he'd recommend me to start off with, like, just taking maybe 1.5 to 2 grams, kind of tread the waters a little bit. And then, you know, I was just basically getting information on how that worked. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty good time. I was very interested in helping out down the road in the future.
Sure.
So I saved his contact, and I saved his Instagram and stuff, and then that way I could follow up with them down the road. But fast forward, the pandemic, you know, came out of nowhere, and that's when the story really took off for my mycology journey and everything. So COVID happened. I got laid off from my good job of 3 years. And I was like, crap, what do I do now? So then I ended up working at Amazon doing delivery and such. But I was going through a lot of rough stuff. But I went over to my mentor's place. And man, you know, very thankful for that guy and his mentorship, especially for all the rough stuff I've been through. But he was the one that introduced me to actually physically trying them, because I've only heard about them. Like, the right. spore was planted, I guess, mm-hmm. is how I would refer it to.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But actually getting to try them was the time when lockdown was in full effect. So he was able to get a creme bag in me, which it wasn't necessarily the best quality, but it got me started.
Right, sure.
And, you know, I went half and half that on him. And then I took some with him at his place, and I took the micro amounts first. And then I started seeing the change of color and the heightened, like, it wasn't bad. Like, it was like a nice little light introduction. Yeah. And then, like, I felt like the senses and laughing and stuff, and not thinking about what's going on in the world or how, you know, this whole lockdown was in effect. And then, you know, the other time when we ate a pretty good amount, that's when I started seeing the full patterns and everything, and the faces, and, you know, the different, like, indigenous characters you would see pop up in the wood fence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, this really got me to change my whole view and perspective. And this was, you know, back in his, like, old backyard at his old place, but he went through a rough divorce not too long ago. I lost my good job, so we were basically just taking care of each other, you know. Like, as what brothers.
I'm going to stop you for a minute. I'm going to say, this is the first time you took mushrooms?
Yeah, that was the official first time I've taken them. It was in 2020. So it was fairly recently.
Okay. So, keep moving on. So so you did these mushrooms with him in his backyard of his house.
Yep.
His home. And?
And it was just, you know, it was a very positive, like, enlightening experience. Yeah. And then, of course, I took some extra home, and then on another occasion, I ate them at home, and then I saw, like, the patterns and, like, the different geometrical stuff, and it was like, wow. But, you know, of course, things were getting expensive during COVID,
yeah.
and then I thought to myself, you know, I could do this for myself, if not probably better than what I've gotten.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this low ball amount for a high price. I mean, I get it, you know, it's scarcity and all that stuff, but I just couldn't justify in doing that again. So that's when I started digging, started looking for the research. So then I came across, like, different channels, like on YouTube, and, you know, found first, like, Arvin47 and some of the old, like, Shroomery accounts before mm-hmm. they got removed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came across, believe it or not, Philly Golden Teacher. That's when he started popping up. And yeah. I loved how his videos were very easy to follow, and they were very simple mm-hmm. to follow. And, you know, when I didn't want to do the, you know, brown rice bags anymore from Uncle Ben's, because I just didn't like throwing away plastic and stuff or buying bag. It was just to start, but I wanted to keep making my own grain. I didn't want to buy bags of whatever and then just go through all that.
Right.
So then that's when I started, you know, investing into looking for mason jars. But that's when things were really hard to get, because the supply chain was down. It was really hard to score anything. And then I was able to get lucky and buy an $8 pack when it just came back in stock.
Uh-huh.
And Walmart surprisingly shipped it to me with no damage.
Oh, so nice.
That worked out, and I was so glad to get that first case. And then that's when I started, you know, I started off with Unmod Tech with the jars, and I did the brown rice. But I found with the brown rice, it's kind of hard to get a certain consistency regularly, and I just didn't like how mushy the grains get and how hard it was to break it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I went into popcorn, because of Arvin47's popcorn video tutorial. And I just liked how it was easy to do, but I can't do that anymore because the wifey doesn't like the smell of corn in the house.
Okay.
I'm not going to fight over her on the corn smell, so I had to switch it up to birdseed. But that's how I got started with actually getting decent at the whole mycology thing. was trying out the different grains and understanding how to get grains properly prepped, and then along with learning the agar work and such.
And we've gotten to watch it all. That's the really cool thing, is you've shared all your stuff with us on DMT World. Like,
oh yeah,
all your different things that you've done and tried, and I mean, it's all here. Like, you've documented probably better than anybody that I know in the community has. Of course, you haven't also deleted your account either. So, like, stuff has been there consistently. And, like, that's crazy to know that you took your first mushroom in 2020. And now, like, what you're producing is, like, and what you're doing. Okay, so let's keep. Okay, so we've gone to bird seed. Right. Do you like the bird seed? Is it working really well for you?
It works really well. I mean, I think what's nice about it is that, especially Philly teachers or Golem teachers on tutorial in regards to doing the no-soak prep, it just it makes it easier to just like getting the grain process down. And I'm all about simplicity. And, you know, if you're able to follow a simplistic method, it tends to work out a lot better as opposed to like trying to soak things in a bucket for 24 hours. And also, I really don't like to leave stuff out for too long, per se, because I'm for sure going to end up forgetting about it. And then I'll end up just having a bunch of grains there for who knows how long.
Sounds like a cultivator's issues. I've heard that quite a bit from people. Okay, so.
Yeah.
You've gotten in the mushrooms. How have you gotten into doing all the work in the community and bringing awareness and helping with that aspect? Because, like, you just had your first mushroom in 2020 with a guy that you ultimately have started helping. Is that correct?
Well, he's a mentor of mine, but, okay. I met him when I worked at Costco during the phone days, but, he was going through a rough divorce and I went through a rough job loss. So we were both trying to rediscover ourselves, you know, at a really rough time period. So we kind of like built that brotherhood by taking the mushrooms together, learning things together. And then I just simply take whatever I learned from him and I apply it, whether I take it by myself or I end up educating on dosage with someone else or whatnot. But that's one of the good folks that got me into them. But yeah, as of getting into the activism work, during 2022, I hadn't had much go on. You know, I just got done dealing with Amazon. I was so fed up with working with that company. And I just don't recommend that work to anyone, but it's work if you need to get by. Gotcha. I'll just leave it as that.
Duly noted.
Anyway, so fast forward, I reached out to the, you know, Decriminalized Magic Mushroom campaign because I saw that they had a couple of like meetings going on. So I went down over to Ocean Beach for a meeting. And the first meeting I went to, I picked up some signature stuff, networked with a couple of folks. And this was during when lockdown stuff was kind of loosening up a bit, but it was still fairly strict, meaning you couldn't really do much without a mask, but the mask policy wasn't really well enforced in Ocean Beach. It's a pretty hippie-ish kind of a place, and people tend to be carefree and free-spirited. It's a great place. It makes me happy that at least there was some sanctuary during that rough COVID period. But then it was during that night market, too. But I didn't know I was going to end up working at the night market eventually. But fast forward, I went to another decriminalized meeting. And then that's when I ran into my old boss / old business partner when, you know, I decided to help him out this small lab setup over down in San Diego at his mini facility. So I went down to the meeting and then, you know, I networked with them and we decided to get to work together. And that's when I started learning a little bit more about how certain people, I guess, operate certain things in regards to like certain setups. I'll tell you one thing. It was discreet. It was, you know, just private research, private business. And basically you wouldn't know unless someone on the inside were to give it all away per se.
But it was
really interesting to get into the whole research I guess, category of it.
Oh,
but
yeah,
on the whole underground, but on the whole underground level. So, right. You know, it was really good working with him. He used to work in intelligence, former CIA agent. You know, told me about his old intelligence days, and then of course that he went to school for studying neuroscience, and
learning
about the blood-brain barrier and all that stuff. I know, quite an interesting character, but he knew a lot about how these substances worked.
Right.
And his goal was he just wanted to help other folks out, meaning making the medicine easily accessible to people that are deserving of having them.
Right.
So we were, you know, and we helped out veterans. We've helped out people that really needed the help. And that's usually when we would be at the night markets, you know, just being discreet. We just offered a low donation, you know, if they wanted to contribute. But I've also given cultivation advice to other folks, and, you know, it feels rewarding to be able to go out and help others and to, you know, give them that access, that a safe access that they deserve, but also to give them advice if they decide they want to do it for themselves.
Right.
But around that time too, there was another guy. He went by SD Myco or SD Myco Supply. But unfortunately, that guy was literally pushing it for profit from what I was seeing it.
Yep.
And that's how he got himself in some trouble. An undercover cop went up to him, asked him if he had any magic mushrooms for sale.
Oh.
And then the guy, and then of course they sold the agent, obviously greed always overconsumes.
Yikes.
Yep. And sometimes I feel like the spirit of the mushroom will purposely get you in trouble.
Absolutely.
If you decide not to use it for proper purposes.
Right.
And that guy got shut down completely because, again, you know, this was after George Floyd. A lot of the police departments were defunded. It was just a free-for-all, basically. Like, there was people selling all types of stuff.
Well, I bet.
But we were discreet. We know how the game worked. But this guy, you know, he was a clout chaser. He made a huge... He just got himself in trouble, basically. And now the business, whatever he created, just collapsed. But, you know, it's just wild what some people would do. But after that, we didn't see him again. So, you know, must have had some legal issues. Who knows?
Sounds like it.
But it's funny because the guy I used to work with, you know, he kind of understood how they operated. And he did do a booth day with them once to kind of see how being a vendor kind of works.
Mm-hmm.
But they were not being smart. They didn't have, like, certain rules in place.
Oh,
but for us, we had really strict rules. 21 plus, no kids around. And that's just the rules. And we were very firm on it. And that's why we've had no issue. And also, we didn't have anything on display, just a petition if you wanted to sign the petition.
Yep.
If you wanted to learn about dosaging, you would simply consult us about it. And anything that you donate, it's basically you're donating for our time. You're not paying for a product or anything like
that.
Right. And that's how we operated. And then we met some people that had a magic mushroom church and other folks that come to network around the drum circle area. So that's kind of how you get around certain things.
Sure.
But also California being a very tolerant state to certain activities. Mm-hmm. I will just leave it as that.
Right.
Ever since Prop 47, Prop 57 went into effect, they made a lot of felonies, misdemeanors for like nonviolent crimes.
Right.
So if it's substance or if it's, you know, shoplifting or even armed robbery is considered nonviolent, which I think it's ridiculous.
You said armed robbery is considered nonviolent?
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
It's wild. Like the prosecutors just won't prosecute it. And they let the people out back in the street and just do it again and again. Like that's why you see those videos up in Oakland, you know, they're holding people up.
Mm-hmm.
And they just do it again because there's no consequence.
That makes no sense to me. I don't know. California does this, some weird stuff, though.
But of course, when you don't want it to be a gray area matter anymore and you want it to be clear as day on paper, then it gets vetoed. That's what doesn't make sense.
Well, see, and that's what's happened, right? That's what happened with... It seems like California is like been pushing to, you know, we want to legalize these things. We want to decriminalize these things. And then it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Maybe we don't want to do this. And then It's like you guys are left up in the air.
No, exactly. And we don't have any clarity.
Right. So tell me the legalities of where you're ever at.
Sure.
Like what?
Okay. So let's say I were to get caught with a small possession amount, they would treat it like it's a fentanyl possession amount, meaning they would more than likely just confiscate it from you because they're not going to go out of their way, and police are very limited as it is. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go out of their way and chase after every user because there's too many drug users around the area. There's fentanyl going on. There's meth going on. There's so many other substances. They can't chase after all of them. So it's like it's basically like playing whack-a-mole.
So but they they take it, slap your hand, and you go.
Pretty much. Or the worst you're going to get is a $1,000 fine if you disturbed the peace in public or you did something ridiculous. But that's if you're not homeless. If you're homeless, there's nothing they can do.
Not even misdemeanors? Do they even
use nothing? No. I mean, most of the time, it's just an infraction. Like, I've talked to the cops, like, at my gas station job that I work at.
Right.
It's frustrating. They can't do anything. Like, literally, for the most part, they can only really give people tickets for speeding and just be the social worker, really. So it's just bizarre. I like to call it a clockwork California, you know, like a play on words with the clockwork orange.
Absolutely.
Think of it like that. And that's how I would basically leave California as is. But also it's weird. There are certain pockets. If you go to Riverside, Riverside County is probably the most conservative county you can go to in California. A lot of laws are kind of reinforced because of the certain prosecutors there. But I'm in San Diego, which is a very blue county. Same with Orange County in L.A. A lot of the prosecutors aren't doing much. So it's weird. It's all pockets. So it depends on what pocket of California you live in. But for the most part, a lot of things don't even go. They just throw them out. Or there's just so many limited resources, or the jails are just too full. We have too many people in there. It's just a problem. And I don't know what the long-term solution is going to be, but there's just a lot of issues that they're going to have to address. But California, it's a state where it doesn't know where its priorities are. Usually it's mainly politicians just collecting tax money and not really doing anything with it.
Well, right.
It's just all for gains.
There's a train. There's what the whatever train.
High speed rail.
Right. That never got built or hasn't barely got built. Do you know that Florida has built one that goes from Florida to, I can't remember where it goes, but like it only took them a couple of years. And this has been waiting in California for how long? Like forever, hasn't it? Like,
yeah, it's been forever. Way before I was even born, believe it or not.
How old are you?
25.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, those poor people could be using a train, but they just won't build it.
I mean, the train to Vegas is going to get built much sooner, especially going through the desert from Barstow to Vegas, or Victorville, I think is where it's going to start at.
Right.
But that's by a private developer. And, of course, the private developer is going to go out of their way. They're going to do their own surveillance or scaling of whatever they're going to do.
Right. I think that's what happened in Florida. I think it was a private developer that built that one too. So yeah, you're correct on that.
That's wild.
That is wild. Okay. So tell me the differences in California so decriminalization and then legalization. What are the differences in California?
Sure. So let's say you're in Oakland or Santa Cruz or basically the Bay Area of California.
Okay.
A lot of the rules in the books are not enforced, meaning like when it comes to like to mushrooms and stuff like that, in those specific cities or areas, it's not on the law enforcement's list from what I heard from people that are from up there.
Okay.
So they don't do anything about it up there. In San Francisco, it's a free-for-all. They don't do anything, period.
Yeah.
But if you come down to San Diego again, you know, I think now things are slowly reopening up from this whole pandemic that I would probably caution, meaning, like, if you were to take anything with you, it's advised to keep it out of plain sight, you know, obviously.
Sure.
Or to keep it locked up. Again, the worst you're going to get is a misdemeanor, because I did hear on Hot Brothers at Law. They had a client where this guy went to Disneyland. He had like a magic mushroom chocolate bar. He got caught by Disneyland security with it, and he got charged with a misdemeanor.
But the
guy wasn't very bright. I would have just ate the bar and then walked in.
Right, me too.
And off down happy lane we go. But
right, I like the fact that you mentioned potbrothers.com. You're one of the only other people that I know of that even knows that what that is. So that makes me giggle. What were you going to say? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're all good. But basically, it's like, proceed with caution at your own discretion. But also, in the business that I work in, I do work in hospitality, and I work in the more elite neighborhood of SoCal, which would be the La Costa Aviar area.
Uh-huh.
That area, that's where basically the elites, they don't play by the same rules that your peasants are going to be playing. Meaning, what's a fine? A fine's just a ticket. They just pay it off.
Right.
So they just do whatever the heck they want. And I'm sure behind closed doors.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I've talked to some of my coworkers too, and one of my coworkers who used to work up in Santa Barbara area, he met the CEO of Coca-Cola and told me that he and Bill Gates have had magic mushroom retreats once a year. And I told her, I'm not surprised. And of course, they don't want you to know.
Right.
They don't want you to gain that knowledge. And then when I've shared that, when I shared my 5 gram story about the Moz trip, when I took that 5.2 and then out of nowhere, I had that out of body experience. I got to go to that different dimension, different place, seeing that futuristic city, seeing all the Hindu gods just pop out of nowhere. It's definitely something that, you know, someone else is never going to experience because they're not going to be willing to try it.
Right.
Or they're going to be turned off, meaning they're going to be asleep and they're not going to wake up anytime soon. If not, probably not ever. And, you know, working in a gas station, I always thought it was funny that I'm selling legal products, right? Like tobacco and sugar and all these other, and alcohol and all these other things.
Things that are really bad for you. Yeah.
That's going to do more harm to you. But yet I was working at the night market back in the day, selling something probably that's super healthy for you, if not probably non-addictive, and that's considered illegal. So
right.
I was stuck in that paradox way of thinking, like, wow, how does this even make any sense?
Right.
And also seeing the same customers coming in, getting their big soda cup and just filling it up. It's very repetitive. It's like, wow, they're following the same programming. And it just goes to show that this matrix is definitely indeed a real matrix.
Absolutely. Programming. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I work. My second job is at a music instrument store.
And oh, yes.
You see it there, too. You see that you can see the programming of people on there in there. And I bet at a gas station, it's really because they come in and they get their same thing every day.
Same thing all the time.
And they don't waver from it. If they do, it kind of throws them off their track. Yeah, I bet. I bet you see all kinds of interesting things happening there.
Or if the coffee machine isn't working, they have a caffeine meltdown. Or if they're when the flavor ban took effect, that's when a lot of people rage.
Oh, dude.
Especially when all the menthols got taken away, all the blacks felt targeted. They're like, man, it's like they're singling me out. I'm like, well, you could thank the governor. He's the one that passed this. It ain't me.
I mean,
I've put out notices. I even said I advise you to vote no if you want to keep your certain liberties or privileges, I guess is what we're gonna call them.
Yep.
But no, it was all taken away. And it's funny because, you know, people won't vote. Or, I mean, I understand why they don't, because I know mine doesn't really count either. Even if they have this whole track or whatever.
Yep.
Unfortunately, if there's a lobby group like Kaiser Healthcare or whatever, they're going to lobby against certain people's desires. And that's pretty much what happened. But on the good side, though, you can still go to the reservations, like to the native reservations.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to still sell. So if I wanted a flavored black backwoods, or if I wanted a flavored Dutch, I can just go to the Paula Native or Pechanga or those areas.
Right.
And they got plenty.
Right.
So it's not necessarily the end of the world. It's kind of like when I had to find my microscopy samples, I had to really do the research until I was thankful to get some samples, and then that's when I was able to do what I'm able to do now. But of course, under the whole radar, so to speak.
Is it California where you can't send stuff into?
So it's really weird. So I looked up on some different like forums or arrowheads or like different like laws or sections.
Right.
So in California, you can legally possess the spores as long as it's for microscopic purposes.
Okay.
However, you cannot possess spores with the intent to cultivate or to produce mycelium. So it's this weird jargon that confuses like vendors or other people.
Yep.
That a lot of vendors just don't want to risk it. And I honestly don't blame them. Yeah. I wouldn't want to chance it either, but I haven't had any issues. I think usually it's per discretion, but I did go to the post office. I did mail samples to a good friend, no problem. And it was even out of country and I didn't have an issue. I was honest. I left everything in wording. And so I don't think it's illegal. It never has been.
Right.
It's just, I think the way that they worded the law was to discourage people from selling them for cultivation. I think that's what it was meant for.
I think you're right. Because it makes, it's all about meddling. It's all about meddling the language. We see it through everything. Like, they're not going to give us the clear A-OK, you can go ahead and do this. I mean, look what's happening with your mushroom laws right now. Like, you've got a governor that's like, oh, wait. We don't want to do it that way. We want to actually do it. And then says this other weird way that goes around what the law actually is.
Well, what he wants to do is he wants it to where it's like therapy only, like organ. But slap a California price tag of 4K plus. Think of it like that.
Yeah.
That's what he wants to do. And also, he has sold himself out to Pfizer and a lot of big pharma companies.
Yeah.
I think his pockets are filled with pharma money. But also, this move really got his colleagues to despise him. That I did look up a poll, and this is from everyone in California. Everyone's fed up with him. They don't want him. But it doesn't matter how much we, the people, want him out. He still somehow is still there. He's like the bad squatter that you cannot get out. Kind of like what I went through. And you guys helped me out of that rough spot. Thank goodness.
Right. I don't think we can help Gavin Newsom out, no matter what we do.
No. And he's just not very, he's not a very open-minded progressive, like a lot of people want to paint him to be.
Right.
I think the only reason why he was such a hero for weed legalization, again, it was to increase the taxes, to line his pockets.
Well, yeah.
And that's all it was for, because during the medical only days, it allowed small farmers or small mom and pops to offer their bud to dispensaries, right?
Right.
But once Prop 64 came in effect, that eliminated the mom and pops completely. Everything got branded, everything got matrixed, barcoded. Me and my buddy call it the Matrix shop for a reason.
Yeah.
It's just, and you're paying the Matrix tax when you go in. So basically, the tourists go to the dispensaries, or if you don't want to go hunt around for someone that does it privately for themselves,
right,
that's where you would go. But if you knew someone, like, they do it in their backyard and they just want to give you some just because they're kind, I always prefer to go to those because the quality is going to be much better.
That's old school. That's what we do in Kansas, because we're not legal here, not medical or recreational. So, like, we're still old school. You know, I still call my weed guy, you know, I'm like, hey, I need help. And he's like, okay, what can I do? And here's what's crazy. Okay, so we have Missouri, who is recreational and medical. We have Oklahoma, who's underneath us.
Yeah.
Right. And Oklahoma's underneath us, and they're medical. You got California to the left of us, who is everything. And so, I mean, we're legitimately sandwiched right in the middle of everything. So, like, prices.
Yeah, don't forget Nevada, Oregon, Washington,
right?
Arizona.
So prices in Kansas, where it used to be like, it got pretty steep there for a while. Prices now, I'm like, I've dropped. So, like, my people I go to, because we've got it all around us and people can go an hour and go to a dispensary, the people that are now doing old school are having to drop prices down because they've got so much on hand. They can't get rid of it because everybody's going out of state to all these other places. And our governor and our police people are trying to figure out how they can stop the traffic back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't. I mean, they tried. No. They tried when it was just Colorado, but now, I mean, you just can't. Like, rumor has it that it's either next year or next year and a half that federal is more than likely going to be on the table and be pushed through, and we'll 9 times out of 10 we may get to actually see a federal legalization of cannabis in the United States of America.
I'm pretty positive that it will, because after that farm bill in 2018 went through, I see a lot of those Delta 8 products, and I know a couple of members on the committee that live in really harsh states are able to go to a smoke shop and pay $20 for THCA or Delta 8 or any of those other molecules, and that all came from just the hemp stock.
Heck,
you can get the Delta 9 gummies that are made from hemp.
We can get them. We can get them here in Kansas. There was a... they got really mad at one point in time. So when hemp just really... and CBD and stuff just really kind of got legalized here about almost like 2 years ago. And so like the dispensaries, the CBD dispensaries and stuff started selling flower, the hemp flower and stuff. And then this came through. Well, I'll tell you what, our police force got crazy and they went and raided all of these CBD dispensaries because they were selling pot, and so they had to go through this whole
scheme
and make them understand that what they're doing is legal, and until heat hits this certain product, that it's legal until it's taken and consumed. And Kansas is having a hard time wrapping their brain around what's going on, because they just nobody wants, they just want to, they don't have to do it anymore. They don't want to have to lock people up. They don't want to have to arrest people, because it's legitimately just a misdemeanor here. If you've got under an ounce, they're just like, we're going to take it and we got to charge you this, the fine. And then you move on your merry way.
Yeah, so that sounds about right.
So how do you feel about the direction of psychedelics moving towards more in the therapy and in that regime of stuff that's happening now? Because we're no longer what I've noticed is like, so I was taking psychedelics because it was fun. And of course I was when I was quite a bit younger.
Sure.
And then you took psychedelics because we used to call it needing a new vision. Like when I would find, and I still do that. Like when I'm to that point, like where things are just, I don't know which way I'm going. I don't know what I'm doing. I feel out of my mind. I'm like, I need a new vision. And that's what we used to call it. Either we'd eat a bunch of mushrooms or we'd take a bunch of acid or whatever we would do. And so, you know, essentially we were doing our own self-medication. Now we are in 2023. And we are now pushing, and this movement is rapidly going in the direction of the clinicals and the therapy, and you're in California, so like you're probably seeing a little bit more of this coming into effect faster than I am here in Kansas. So how do you, I like to ask everybody how they feel, because the way that, from my opinion, like I don't want to lose the feeling that I have towards psychedelics as being something that I myself take into my own hands and administer or use or utilize that. I understand therapy, and I've never gone to therapy, none of that, but I can see and appreciate it, how it could help in certain aspects. But my biggest fear is it's going to become this cure-all. All these different psychedelics and all these things that we've been doing for years that we know what they can do for us and how they've helped us. You know, the language and the stuff that I'm seeing is, you know, it's a cure-all, or it's going to make it better. You know, this is how I feel. I'm very conflicted with it. How do you feel about it, especially since you are part of the movement of the activist and helping bringing the use and the knowledge and the understanding to legalization and to the public who do know these things that could potentially benefit maybe from this therapy but maybe not. So tell me, how do you feel about all of this?
So how I feel is I do believe that therapy is important, and I have spoken to a colleague of mine that I work with at the resort who he's done the research at, I believe, at UC Riverside. He did a trial study where someone gave him a lemon tech shot, and he told me his experience in a deep tank, or like in those like sleep tanks or whatever.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So he went through all of that, and he told me that I would probably have never done this personally if I didn't have someone to monitor me. So I understand why it's important, because not everyone's going to be mentally capable, I would think, to go rogue and do it themselves. Like some of us can.
Well, so and that's just important. We're kind of, I think we're all kind of a little special that are in DMT world, because like,
I think so too.
We do our, like you said, we do go rogue and we're like, I'm going to take a whole, I'm going to go eat a whole ounce of mushrooms and see what happens to me. Yeah. What? Yes. So you're right. So, okay, keep going. So you think.
So I think it's a good way to introduce certain folks in the public, but the downside to therapy only is it's going to keep it out of reach for certain folks. And that's for underprivileged folks that don't have the funds to fund this therapy, especially veterans that would like to access this therapy.
Yes.
But we don't know if the VA is going to help them out. You know what I mean? Because I've had Marine colleagues I've worked with in the phone business. Like I knew one guy, he would go to the VA, but the VA is not very helpful. Right. So my concern is if they're going to make this available to veterans in a therapy use setting,
right,
I'm a little concerned, because is the VA going to cover that bill? Are they going to get the help that they need? Are they going to be taken care of? I think that's my main concern. Or let's say it's a person that would like the therapy, like he has a mental health condition and he wants to be monitored and everything.
Right.
My concern is insurance going to cover it? Or are they going to stick this guy with a 4K bill just for a small dose? That is where I'm a little skittish about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there has to be a well-thought plan where it could be accessible to people that really, really need it. Like, let's say you go to the doctors or a psychologist and they write you a waiver of some sort and you go in to get it. There should be something to assist with the cost, because I can't justify taking something from nature and then charging a big price tag when someone could do it themselves for a fraction of the cost.
Exactly.
And I think that's why it's important to be in this DIY community, because we help veterans or people that have been through traumatic stuff. I mean, even me as a civilian, I've gone through a lot of messed up stuff, especially during COVID, or I've been in very uncomfortable scenarios that you have to heal. And it's just something that you have to be humble about, is I need help. But if I want help, I kind of have to learn how to help myself a little bit. That way I can help others down the road.
Absolutely.
So I think that's what's more important. I think it's good. That's why I was a little bummed, because that bill would have been very helpful to at least start the process. And then maybe if, you know, with this whole decriminalized California campaign, unfortunately with that issue in San Francisco with that one pilot or whoever.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That really threw a wrench. It threw a big wrench into the campaign.
He tried to open the emergency door in flight and said he took mushrooms like the day before. It wasn't even like before he got on the airplane. It was like the day before, and then had a had this break and was like, I need to open the door.
And it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me, because again, I've taken like those high amounts where your head's pounding and hurting, but I was able to go to work. I was able to do everything just fine.
Yep.
And if I needed to talk to someone, I would have just talked to the good folks, the DMT world, anyone else with the peer guidance on how to integrate everything. So I don't think that's the case. I think it was just an easy thing to blame. I think that's what it is. Kind of like with that music festival in Washington, where that active duty soldier opened fire at that campsite. I remember that news clip too.
Uh-huh.
So, and that was before Colorado, by the way, was able to get legalized. So that was during that Colorado campaign. So I have a feeling that these news stories are always placed conveniently. Well, when Traction.
Right. That's what I'm wondering too. I wonder if they're kind of like a bump in the road, a rock in the road to kind of slow things down and make people.
I would say a rock in the road.
Yeah.
Because now it's painting Newsom as the hero, like, oh, it's a good thing he didn't sign that bill. He is a wise guy indeed.
Yeah, it's a little too convenient for my liking as well. Because you're right.
Yeah.
That was placed purposely. And what I'm sorry, I've taken mushrooms and gone on an airplane, and the last thing you want to do is get out of your seat.
No.
Because you're tripping on mushrooms. You know you're not grounded. That's the one thing I remember. I remember sitting in my seat and like I remember standing there and I remember the person the stewardess was standing there talking to me and like her mouth was moving, but there was nothing coming out. Like, and I was sitting in between these two big dudes that were obviously I was flying from Chicago to Kansas City. And I was sitting these two guys they were business guys. And we had we'd sat on the runway for like 30 minutes because something wasn't working and the air wasn't going. Right. I remember it was hot, and that's when the mushrooms decided to kick in. And the next thing I know, we are taking off, and the steward is standing above me trying to talk. And I'm just like, I didn't want to go anywhere. I just wanted to be right there in that chair. So, like, for this guy to get up and be like, oh, I'm going to open this door, I don't think so.
It's all too odd. And again, Ryan Miniver, in that news article that I shared, he stated there would have been no way that it could have been the case. And also the way that the political news group painted as throwing a wrench in the campaign. So it's like, okay, you're just projecting the language to now make it. So that's the reason why I don't like to get into that whole, because there's always going to be something to throw out. Like, oh, it's such a bad idea. We got to wait on it. And I mean, we're doing the best we can. You know, unfortunately, I haven't been able to go out and do much because I've been working two jobs and I've been constantly just on a schedule, but
you just when moved. Didn't you?
I did. I just relocated, not to a different neighborhood, just across the way in the complex that I'm in. So it's a lot to get settled in, but I have a feeling that we're probably going to end up having to re-meet and redo another one. But what I like about that organization is they keep going. It doesn't matter how many times that organization has failed. Meaning, it's already been three times that it's been challenging. There's always a fourth time. There's always another time. But I don't think we're going to give up on California just yet because state has a lot.
That's refreshing to know that they keep trying. Because
they keep trying.
When you quit, then everybody's given up. And as long as they've got people interested, especially like you, you're like, I can't do it yet, but I'm going to be able to. Because it is a worthwhile cause. You guys you're also fighting for the individual rights for people to have these substances, to be able to and utilize them, to grow them, to own them, to do with what it's, you know, what they want to. And so that in itself is the whole reason to keep going, because that's for the individual at hand. And that's the greatest.
Well, exactly.
That's the greatest thing right now, that we really need to make sure that anywhere that is starting to decriminalize and legalize is that the individual person gets their right. That's my soapbox. That's the thing I will always put in people's ear, is because people don't realize that sometimes with the decriminalization and the legalization comes regulation, and regulation then puts us right back where we were before things were legalized, and then we don't have any right to it. And then the therapist and the doctors and all them get to tell us what we can and can't do. The government gets to tell us how much we can consume. They get to tell us what we can and can't have. And so, like, that's the main thing too, as you guys are out there. You are fighting for the individual rights, and that's what people need to understand. And that's a movement I think the communities can get behind, is that's what you're doing it for them to be able to have it. I think it's noble.
Exactly.
It's very noble.
Well, it's much appreciated, but also the cultivation. I keep doing it because I love doing what I do, and I love to share and help others that could benefit. I mean, I like to just give away, like, whatever extra I have. Like, I remember I had this one colleague or coworker that stuck by my side when I dealt that terrible environment at that one work site.
Right.
I just gave him a full ounce bag, like, here, don't, because he was a recovering addict. You know, he was hooked on fentanyl during the pandemic. He was dosing on acid while going to his rehab thing. And I told him, you know, just take this discreetly. You know, don't even worry about it. You've done enough just by sticking by me until I got harassed out last week at that work site. So, you know, and I never saw that kid again. We only hung out one other time, and that was it. And that made me feel good because I helped out somebody that actually needed it, because they have helped me out in another way in return.
Dude, that guy's been talking about you since you probably did that. So, yeah,
I'm sure.
Great.
This 19-year-old kid, you know, I usually don't encourage under use of 21, but for what he's been through, he's very matured. He's already properly used another psychedelic substance. He doesn't abuse it, and he also quit the weed altogether too, just to get off period of the addictive personality. So I was really proud of him, and it was an honor that I got to know that kid before he went back to Wisconsin, because he couldn't afford to stay out here anymore due to the circumstances that we all went through at that environment. But I'm sure that's a story that he's told a lot of other folks. But that makes me happy, because I help others, and if I don't see you again, hey, at least I passed a message. You know. And then there's this other lady I gifted too. She works at a dispensary, and really sweet lady. But she gifted me a lot of cannabis when I was working at the gas station. She would just slide stuff for me under the counter. When I was talking, I know, it was very kind of them. But I talked to her about, you know, the campaign and the initiative, because she's an old timer. Like, you know, she's done them before, but I think just the golden teachers or whatnot. But sure. I gave her a bag as a gift for her birthday, and then she misplaced it. And it was in the clear sealed plastic bag. And then when she finally found them, I think the fruits have already oxidized because they were exposed to light. She didn't get any effect at all. So I felt terrible. I'm like, look, it happens. Mm-hmm. I got you something better. So then I gifted her a small Melmac bag. Just the 5 grams. I told her, look, these are very, very strong.
Yeah.
I wanted to repay you back 2 to 5 times, basically. So I highly advise you to split the stem. You and a friend basically split half and half, stay in a chilled, comfortable environment, and basically choose to do them when you're fully ready. Then also the bag, and I also put a cool hippie sticker on the back of the bag, and I'm like, just put it in your drawer, keep it safe, don't rush yourself. Mm-hmm. But now you know that you have that available to you. So hopefully, you know, she gets to go on her journey with, you know, a friend of hers or a relative, but she just recently became a grandmother. So I really like helping out folks that have gone through a big change in life. But also, for them being there for me during a rough period, it feels good to pay them back in a very positive way.
Absolutely.
Feels good to bless. I just love to bless people and be generous, because that's what DMT World's taught me. I've been blessed by a lot of you folks. I'm just simply spreading the message out to everybody else.
Yes. Because that's the thing about DMT World. I always feel, I feel kind of bad when the people come in and they're like, where can I get? And it's like, we're all like, well, you've got to do it yourself. And part of me is like, these people are like, and I feel bad to the point, because you can't just come out and be like, try to explain to anybody why they need to learn it. It's kind of, it's kind of a self journey anyways, because you get through it and you're like, oh, I've been paying how much to get these from so-and-so and so-and-so, and like the realization of like, there's no amount of money that can be placed on what we're learning in DMT world, from extractions to cultivations to just the knowledge of some of the stuff. Like, there's stuff I wouldn't even know. I didn't even know I wanted to know until DMT World came about. And the fact, like, this is information and knowledge that, you know, always felt like it was hidden. And it took a long time and many groups and many forums. And for many of us, that all this information now that we put into this one domain, this one platform, is like years worth of work. Like, yours is 3 years worth of learning and experiencing and, you know, your whole mycology journey, because you were first time in 2020, and that's when it started with us. And so the value that is behind DMT World is, it's unbelievable. And like, people come, I wish we could like instill the new people that come in and be like, okay, this is what we've learned in 4 years. And they just get it. Because we now live in a day and age where social media is, we have lots of social media bad habits. People come in from other platforms, and what they don't realize is that DMT is not algorithm powered. In fact, on our app, our likes don't even register unless you like click in. Like if I've posted something, you can see like two people liked it. But if you don't go and click into the like, you won't see that like 12 people actually liked it. And, you know, I've been trying to get that fixed for a while, but the other day I had a realization the other day that DMT World is not powered by the algorithm. Sure, I go and click on something, it'll push it up in everybody else's feed, but, like, there is no outside anything. And it's like, that's the most beautiful part about DMT
World. It is.
People are always like, you know, it's not a lot's going on in here. Yeah, it moves at a slower pace.
Yes.
But it also moves at a pace where, like, we can actually think about things. This is also why there's no fighting, really, that goes on. No. I mean, sure, we get our certain people in there that like to...
Fun family feuds. Yeah, family feuds are a lot of fun. And that's how I look at it. We're just one big family. We all have different opinions.
Exactly.
We're all at the Thanksgiving table and... Uncle Bob said this, and then someone said that. That's
really
what it is. That's
it
what
is.
Power community is, and it's good because you want to have that sense of family. You want to have that sense of connection. Mm-hmm. That's what makes us unique compared to, like, again, I'm not on the whole Insta stuff. I mean, I have my public stuff there, sure, but
it's so hard. I don't.
I can't put things out like that. I have to be very professional, especially in the work environment that I'm in.
Right.
And yes, a lot of my higher-ups that I do work with, like bosses and stuff, they also do take psychedelics.
Right.
But we save that for banquet events, like when we talk about those things.
Right,
when we're on the floor, we have to act like the elites, discreet.
Business is business.
In the shadows, and business is business.
Right.
So that's why I like, but what I'm learning is I want to learn how to get into a higher society, but I want to be able to approach regular people like I always have been. And just stay the humble person I am in hopes to help in others. But, you know, it's good to have that balance. You want to, be professional, but also you got to be yourself at the same time. You cannot be robotic, and you cannot be like a Jeff Bezos or any of those kind of people.
Right, because then nobody's going to want to be around you because it's fake. We don't want the fakeness of, you know, I get Facebook is really an interesting place anyways, but some of the groups and people get in there. And, you know, the one thing that really bugs me about the psychedelic community in itself is like, the lingo. There are some people that just overuse the psychedelic lingo. And that's, we don't have it in DMT World. Like, we have real people that sit in our community that are not throwing just verbiage, are not just out there trying to, you know, push all the information, trying to look and try to be a certain person.
Yes.
I also think that's why a lot of us, my favorite is people's like, I've never seen a community like this, or this is a different type of community. And I'm always like, I can only imagine what platforms those people have been in and what kind of like verbal abuse or just the way that people get in on social
media. People, when they're behind a screen and they have the anonymity behind themselves, but on a semi-public platform, they're really brave behind a screen. But again, I work with the general public. If you were to tell that to my face up front, well, I would be like, pardon me, sir. And I would just give you a weird look like, you're right. But you know, this is the problem with social media at the same time. It brings an optical illusion that you can be bold and say all these things. But if you were to meet a dangerous person in public, yes, I have. I'm used to rough people. I'm used to all types of people.
Right.
Because I'm a very people person. And I think it's important because we have to have social interaction. We cannot be detached, and we cannot act like Mr. Tough Guy online. Because growing up in the hood, I would say, we used to have these things in high school where someone tried to start online beef, they would actually go to your front door, knock on the front door, and be like, hey, we're going to fight on the front lawn. That those were the times that I grew up in. Like, absolutely. Online beef, that was ended quick. Because you would go, because you lived in that small town, you would go and then that was it, it was over. But I think now with the younger generation, especially a lot of the Gen Zer kids, again, I know they put my year in that category. I don't count it because, again, I've grown up with a payphone. I've had a rotary dial growing up. I had to catch buses. I paid with quarters mainly. I've had a really simple life way back then.
Right.
And I had a landline. My dad didn't have internet because it was way too expensive back then. We just had a VHR, and we used to get free videotapes at the library and return them. I lived very simple times.
Oh, really, the simple life. Hey, I would go back to that simple time. If I could get rid of my phone and I could get rid of some of this technology that we seem to have integrated into our daily, everyday lives. Like, when I lived in Chicago in the end of the 90s, it was 1999. Like, we didn't have a cell phone. I look at my roommate, I'm like, oh, how did we get around Chicago without maps? You just learned the L train. You just learned the things.
Yep.
And it was just like simple.
Yep.
If I didn't want anybody to find me or get a hold of me, I just didn't answer the landline, or sometimes the landline didn't work, you know.
No, 100%.
But now, like, we leave our phone somewhere and it feels like we're missing an appendage of our body.
Oh, I know. And it's crazy with, especially with, like, the seeking of validation. I think that's a problem with the mycology community on Facebook and Instagram, too, is I think sometimes people try to seek validation.
Yes.
Being like, oh, I'm doing a cool illegal activity.
Yes.
Come and see my garage with 100 plus stacked mono tubs. Trust me, when I worked in that little micro facility, we were very firm. We didn't do that stupid stuff because we know what that leads to. I mean, that poor kid.
Yes.
I mean, again, poor kid, but at the same time, fans outside inviting people over. No.
Yeah, they're just kind of, there seemed more to it than just an absent-minded kid who just didn't know that he was breaking the law.
Like, I mean,
that was a whole setup.
I would say so. I mean, and the nosy neighbor too. I mean, if the kid was smart enough, you would have told the nosy neighbor you're trespassing on my property.
Right.
And then also, if I were him, if the DA, which yes, it has happened, they have shown up in the neighborhood, but it was for the crack house back at the facility I used to work at. They were going after the crackheads, not me or the former boss, but we didn't take chances. We closed up ASAP. Done. Closed up. We weren't, and it was over. And then we just had to move on our separate ways.
Yep.
But we don't play, you don't want to play around. And that's why I wish I could have mentored that kid and be like, this is why if you get a knock at the door, you got to trash everything.
Right. You get rid of it. It's gone. No, you went nothing. Don't let them tie you into anything.
But no, consequently, that's what we have going on. I mean, I feel for his family. And I do feel for that Os Ulbricht guy, too. I feel for all of them. But it's just that you have to have, you know, you got to have a guise. You have to be very...
Discretion?
You have to operate in the shadows and discretion.
Yes. Totally.
I mean, that goes for a lot of things. And I mean, again, the feds are too much. They're the worst. And that's in any department. I've dealt with the IRS.
Say, have you gotten in any trouble?
Everything.
Have you gotten in any trouble or had any issues with any law at all? Like, have you read into that anywhere?
Fortunately, no. I have been very thankful that I just played the non-burnt game. I'm not going to be burnt.
Yep.
And I try to look at it like how someone in intelligence would work, and I just simply operate in the shadows, just like any other smart person would do. And then if there's a time to say enough's enough, I go back to just simplicity, which is why I'm a hobbyist, and which is why I just keep, you know, my private business to private business to myself. And then I just, you know, keep a simple life after that. But no, I mean, I haven't had any issues. I mean, I've had really bad run-ins with the cops growing up, but it was the cops that weren't doing their job properly. But I knew my rights enough that they couldn't stick me with anything. I mean, I've had cops try to accuse me of speeding, but I told an officer I was going the speed limit. I have been profiled wrongly, leaving my wifey or fiance's old neighborhood. I got pulled over, and the cop wanted to unconsentingly search my car. I say, I do not consent. Mm-hmm. What's the probable cause? And I'm like, officer, I'm not on probation. My license is clean. I don't know what you're talking about. And I just played it silent. And I mean, I've had enough bad run-ins that, and then my mom hates the cops too. Actually, they even suspended her license because one cop accused her of parking in a red zone when she didn't. So I guess, you know, I just learned to just not trust them, just like you would anywhere else in the world. You just can't trust them, period.
Right.
So, you know, I do appreciate the ones that actually go out and do a heroic job on certain things.
Right.
But I don't appreciate the bad apples, because then if you get a bunch of bad apples, it ruins the whole barrel. And that's why we have these George Floyd protests and all these other wild things.
Right. Because,
we can't come to an agreement. Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly right. We do. There are some good cops out there that, you know, do things in the community and whatnot, but there are a whole slew of bad cops out there, and unfortunately those cops are the reason why, you're exactly right, why we're having some of our issues. What's the answer? Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
But no, it's a whole lot.
It is a whole lot. I know several that are retired cops that are very happy that they are no longer serving, because they couldn't deal with what's going on in our world right now. Lots of corruption in all kinds of areas, and it's interesting. So here's my question. So you're at a young 25. You've got a whole world ahead of you. What are you working for? What are you working towards? Not in a business, like in the psychedelic community, because it's apparent you're going to be sitting for a long time. What do you want to do with it? What is on in your future that you are working towards, or that you see, or that you just are going to put your efforts into?
So my efforts to keep moving forward in this community is to just always keep learning, always asking for advice, always, you know, aiming to help others. But more importantly, just getting the cultivation down to where it's just magic, you know, it just comes naturally. And then being able to pass that same knowledge to others. What I'm trying to aim for.
Mm-hmm. Are you documenting? Are you, like, not just what you're putting in DMT world, but are you actually taking everything that you have learned in the last 3 years and writing it down somewhere?
So I've taken notes on all the texts that I've worked on, and I usually try to tie it in with my trip reports.
Yeah.
So every trip report that I have, I also basically copy and paste all those and save those.
Oh, that's smart.
Because I'm aiming to better myself spiritually as a person and generally as a person, by taking as much as I can. But in order for me to get to that point, I got to ask myself which tubs or which techniques work? What can I do to improve or fix? I mean, I just looked at a couple MailMac tubs and I already knew why two of them failed.
Right.
And that was because of the move. I had to put the lid on. I had to be discreet. There wasn't much I could really do about it, but I'm not too worried about it because now I got those new mono setups that I'm going to be testing out. So I'm very excited to see how those. I'm very excited. It's a BOD tech, and I think it was hidden away, but it was on YouTube originally, but I was able to find it in writing on the Shroomery. I've been going back on the Shroomery. I asked Monkhausen, I believe. He was the guy that did the distilled water where you drop the agar puck and then you turn to a liquid inoculant. I learned that from him. And then I'm learning about how Bod uses these specific Sterlite tubs for just a simple mono, meaning you don't have to drill holes, nothing. And I think he has a way of describing where you flip the lid automatically upside down while everything is already spawned. It's saying that the mushrooms want lots of AE, and I think with the container big enough with the lid closed, but it has a gap, it allows the right humidity, I think, to allow the cake to thrive. And then with the good enough FAE being regulated without having to do anything, it was just the design of that specific tub.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to seeing how that works out in theory.
Right, because you don't have to touch it then.
No, I don't have to deal with it because shoeboxes are fun. They can be complicating sometimes. I mean, I feel like, you know, leaving the lid on a little bit and then just fanning and making sure enough light gets to it.
Right.
I had to fix that. Thank goodness for Gaia Gazing's advice. I really do appreciate her for many things. But I'm glad I got that whole shelf setup changed, that now I've seen the results improve. So now I know lighting is important for directional growth.
Right.
But it's a matter of like getting the right humidity and then more importantly, getting enough FAE.
Right.
And I think it's genetics too. Because I know some genetics, like I've learned with Melmac, it performs best with multi-spore.
Oh.
But then there are some that perform better if you do maybe a transfer to. So it's kind of weird. But it's just something I got to play around. But I've learned from different like channels that it's always good to start with multi-spore, as in multi-spore is king.
Right.
And then I've been having a hard time getting my cloning technique down, but the goal is to master that so that way I can improve and basically go from multi-spore to clone and then from clone to a new culture transfer from that clone. And right. Then if it goes well and let's say I want to keep it around, then I'll probably attempt the LC, but turn it into a liquid inoculant first and then pour it into the LC for an easy transfer. I think that's what I'm trying to aim for the next project.
No.
With Melmac specifically, right now I'm trying to clear out some other culture cups. That way I can make room for fresh stuff.
Interesting. So my recommendation to you is start writing everything down. We need to look into maybe seeing if we can put a book or something together.
I was thinking the same thing, because, like a mushroom grow guide.
Right. Because, you know, you really want to get this knowledge to other people to help them out. I think that's a really good,
yes.
like I said, with your documentation that you've put in DMT World alone, and then everything that you're working on, I think that's something you should think about doing.
I would like to do that.
I know some people, I know a person who's very close to us that has a publishing company.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, so that is probably something we could actually get in the works and get there and do that. So that's just my advice to you, is I think that's a good direction for you to do that. So we can get
Absolutely.
All your information. Because like I said, 2020, like some of these people that have been in our community have been doing this for years and years and years. You've been doing it for 3 years, and I think you have come leaps and bounds. I was talking to somebody the other day about how interesting it's always is to pull up DMT World, because you are constant. You're constantly working on something. You have like this hunger to keep getting and better and improving.
Exactly.
And it's really exciting, and that's fun. It's also fun because every picture that I've ever seen of you, like you always have something over, you always have a thing on your face, and they're always different. I have a collection of all your different profile pictures because they're all so different and unique, and I just think that's really cool. Even the one with Shaboy, you still had your face covered.
Yes.
And I appreciate that because I understand the reasoning.
It's risky.
Right. It's
very
risky
business because, again, after having, again, ICE and the DEA all in 1 year and then the IRS coming after, it was all too coincidental.
Right.
And I'm like, no, I know this. I think it's just the Matrix throwing hints that, hey, you know,
slow down, be careful.
Slow down a bit. Yeah exactly. So, right, because, no, I mean, yeah.
Because what happens to you, especially cultivators, you guys get going, and the next thing you know, you've got this whole big, huge operation. And it's because you guys love it so much. My favorite is to sit and talk to cultivators because they have this passion for these little tiny mushrooms that have entered their lives. And then the next thing you know, they're like, it's really fun. It's fun to talk to people that grow mushrooms because there's just a different understanding that mush growers have. It's real interesting. So
exactly.
You've been here for 3 years.
Yes.
What have you seen that you liked or that you've disliked or that you've learned, or just what has your experience in DMT world from the time you started to the time now been like?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, during some really hard times, it's good to have like friends you can consider family, because you know, over time, especially after like my grandfather's passing, I've become to realize that your family may not even be your family. And there's a whole lot of, and you know, I can go into detail, but what I'm saying is usually there's family that's not even related to you blood-wise, but they'll have your back regardless. Right. And you know, you're going to have someone to talk to, or you're always going to have a connection with somebody. And that's what I like about this community in particular, is that family aspect.
Yeah.
And that's important. And it's important to have, because, you know, it's great that, you know, Zach wants to invite me to come visit him. I would be very happy to. It's just a matter of getting everything worked out with work and whatnot. But I would love to go back up to Oregon just, you know, to go explore. It's a beautiful state.
Yep.
I haven't been there since I was a kid, back when my grandparents were still alive and we spent time up there. But I wouldn't go to see my blood relatives up there because, you know, I can't consider them really family, especially after the whole event that happened in March. Right. So I had to keep my composure. I left good partings and was able to move forward from that grief. But, you know, but I just didn't have a reason to go back up there to visit. So it's really kind of Zach to reach out and be like, hey, you should come up and visit. I'm like, for sure. I'm definitely going to add that into my plans. But it's convenient because I could just take the Amtrak from where I'm at all the way up there. No problem. And I think that's the way I'm going to do it.
You should. The Amtrak is amazing. When we went to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and went up to the Ethno Fest,
I have to do that next time.
Oh my gosh. We are going to make it an annual thing. So we will make sure everybody knows when we're doing it so they can make the journey. We're also going to, I think it's in March, April, May, something like that. They have the Hash Bash every year there.
Oh, yes. I've heard about that too.
We're going to go do that too and try to make it a thing as well. But Oregon, definitely. When you find out when you go, let me know when you guys are going to maybe try to plan that, because I haven't been to Oregon in a long time and I really enjoy Oregon.
Absolutely. No, it'd be great.
The Amtrak is the way to go. There's this.
Agreed.
The rails are just okay. There's no TSA, so I can bring on
it. No.
And yes. Comfort. The comfort of a train is so much better than being squeezed as a sardine in three seats of an airplane. Like, the lounge cars alone, like the fact that you can get up and you can walk through the train and like do your thing and go get food and like, yes, the train. You should totally take the Amtrak up to Oregon.
That's the way to go, 100%. And I just like the fact that the train lot is not crowded. I could just get out at a Uber drop-off for 10 bucks and boom.
Absolutely.
To go to the airport, it's a nightmare. I do not like LAX. Mm-mm. San Diego, it's smaller, yes, but it's crowded. So
Terrible. All the airports are terrible. I agree 100%. Yes, Amtrak is the way to go. See, I can jump the train here in Topeka and then kind of just go wherever, and it's nice.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's great to have, and it's nice to just see the view, because I mean, I have driven from down here all the way up to San Jose and back. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put mileage on my old Buick.
How do you afford the gas?
that's the thing. It's a thick, everyone in the group had a pitch in more than they had. I'm like, I'm sorry guys, but my car was on the carpool list. And I told everyone my car is a gas guzzler, but you decided to go along with it anyway. So got to pay up.
Right.
And gas is ridiculous out here. So no, I am going to be fine with the train. I'd prefer that over anything else.
Yes, absolutely. So we're getting towards the end of this interview. I like to ask people, I'd like to ask people. So you can say anything to this community. What would you say? It can be anything. Just whatever you feel you'd like to say to the DMT world community. This is your opportunity.
So let's just keep working together. Let's keep learning from each other. But more importantly, we all need to be kind to each other and to just understand each other's differences, but also just simply get along. We all got to be one big happy family with, you know, one thing in common. That's just the love for plant medicines and psychedelics.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think we're at the end of this interview. I have had the best time getting to sit here and listen to you and just learn about you. You've always been this this masked person on the website, and then getting to sit and like talk to you, like I think you're fantastic. I think what you're doing.
Thank you.
I do. I think what you're learning and just how you approach life, I think it's spectacular, and I hope everybody gets inspired from you just as much as I do. I want to say thank you for accepting the invitation to being on the Rambling Rabbit. I appreciate that because
it's an honor.
Talking to you and talking to people in the community is it's very uplifting, and it kind of just does my soul really good. So I just want to say thank you.
Of course.
With that being said, I hope everybody enjoyed this interview. I know I did. And with that being said, keep ascending, friends.